Welcome to Discovery 1, Module 5, Part 2.
So, before we actually move into some of the stuff in Chapter 5, any questions on labs or anything out of the chapter for those who've read it?
I would say that finally I started seeing active exams a few hours ago. And for some reason, they were all still inactive till like 3 in the morning, my time. But they're working today. Didn't take any yet, but at least they're working. So that issue's resolved. I won't be bugging your email about that anymore.
You're sitting behind a proxy or something? Because you're the only one seeing that behavior.
No. Not at all. And like I say, it was yesterday, certainly, or, you know, the whole weekend, whenever I tried, but today it's just completely normal.
They may have expired. I don't remember when the last expiration was, but I put them up as of some point yesterday evening my time.
I forget, where are you at?
East coast of the U.S.
Eastern time zone? All the way east coast?
Yes. Yep.
There was one thing I saw, and this is a way back in Chapter 3 lab, I believe, that was talking about something being, pay attention to, or note the capitalization. Well, it was all in small, non-capitalized letters. And I did check it 2 or 3 times, and none of it was capitalized. And it was asking, would the, you know, this be any different if it were presumably not capitalized, was the implication. So I don't know what that one was really supposed to be. But I've just discovered that on the Windows XP installation on this laptop, basically no command line utilities are working. I can't ping. I can connect, but I can't ping. I can't do traceroute. I can't do anything on this this laptop. So that could possibly even mean that one of the cables I have is good and was not working because of this laptop, although I think I always was testing things, you know, going back the other way too. But it's not showing some, but that wouldn't even matter because I actually wasn't showing some connection, so that could be some of my trouble. I may actually have a good cable. I'll know when I get home. But I'm sitting behind a roadblock. There's protests going on in a little town about 30 minutes from here that's in between me and the big city. So I may have to hike around that to get home, but I'll do that day after tomorrow, if not tomorrow, if they don't clear these fools out. Very unique Mexican custom. It doesn't usually speed things along to do this, and it certainly doesn't affect the governing bodies, but they love to block highways here.
Well, with the lab, I think I remember which one you're talking about. You were supposed to have put your PC names as like capitalized all caps PC and the number 1, and then all caps PC.
Right,
and number
that's
2.
The one.
And technically, I don't think it's supposed to work because when you do lowercase PC1, because the names are different. Although I have heard of instances where it did, but it's technically, I don't believe it's supposed to work.
I
was assuming they were meaning that and not the command, but
yeah.
Thanks for
just testing
letting me
this.
Know for sure.
No, it works in upper or lowercase here. If I go netview//gots1 in uppercase or lowercase, it works just fine. DNS is case insensitive but case preserving. So www.cool.com with capitals will resolve to the same as lowercase cool.com. So I don't quite know what they're on about there.
Yeah, well, I hadn't checked the answer key either, but I thought that they were looking for it not to work for some reason, but I'm inclined to believe it's supposed to work in either case.
Yeah, I
Wasn't the
thought
other
they were looking
capitalist?
for it to not work too.
Wasn't there also a thing where you had to pay attention to big B and capital B when we were talking about megabits and megabytes? That was the other capitalization issue in chapter 3. Big B's bite you, is the way I remember it. So capital M, capital B slash S is megabytes per second. Capital M, little b is megabits per second.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. We've pretty much talked about the interaction. Let's see. I'm gonna skip quite a few sections because I think we've already covered them pretty good. Now your subnet masks and your IP addresses and all such as that interact. And yeah, okay. I think we pretty much covered all that in the binary lecture last week, how they all interact and give you your varying network and host portions. And let's see. Yeah, that's all. Yeah, that's all what we covered last week. And of course, with your subnet mask. If you have a subnet mask of all every bit that's a one, or yeah, subnet mask of all 255, then that's your broadcast address. And then of course the zeros would be your network ID, so that would give you which network you're on. And I think we have covered all that last week, didn't we?
You'd covered most of that, I think, yeah.
I either
Okay.
maybe when I lost my connection, I kind of missed the subnet mask part,
You're inaudible, Bert.
You need to move closer to your microphone.
I said I think it might have been when I lost my connection, maybe or something, but I missed the subnet mask part last week. If you did go through that well, I think, but I think you pretty much gave me enough right then and there to fill in my doubts. That was always the one I was a little bit vague out, but that's basically that is your broadcast address then. If I were to use I would use that to communicate with everyone on the local network, or maybe I misunderstood what you were just explaining a bit.
Well, your broadcast address is a network-specific address, and you have, or excuse me, not subnet mask, your IP address. I'm looking at the wrong thing here. You have a broadcast IP address, and you have a broadcast
Okay.
MAC address. Yeah. So I had my wording wrong, I think. Your broadcast IP address has your host portion as all 255, so all ones in your host portion would be your broadcast IP address. Your broadcast MAC address is also all ones, which translates out to 12 hex F characters. So if something, say a discover message, needs to be sent out. It's sent out to that broadcast IP address. Everybody picks it up. And then the DHCP servers go and do their thing, and we'll get into that. Yeah, well, that comes up a little bit later, I think, in this chapter. If not, you basically, the client basically sends out a discover message, DHCP discover message, and then the DHCP server is going to respond and say, "Okay, I'll give you this IP address." The client goes back and says, "All right, I'll take it," and you have your IP address if you're doing DHCP. So that's the way to do that. And that's kind of where that's one of the things where the that's one of the situations where the broadcast addresses come in. Let's see. I'm just kind of skimming my notes here. Do we want to... Yeah. Let's go ahead and cover IP address classes. Because I don't think we did that. But before we get into the IP address classes, any questions?
Have we started recording?
A long time ago.
Yep.
A long time ago. Okay. You have 5 different IP address classes. Classes A through E. And class A is pretty much your large networks. You have an IP or a subnet mask of 255.0.0.0, which leaves you 1 octet for your network and 3 for your host portion. Your range. This gives 126 possible networks, and you have 16,777,000+ hosts per network, and the exact figures are in your text. But you don't need to
make
know
it
them.
Simple for yourself. 16.7 million. That's what I always do.
Yeah.
It's 16,777,216, but care factor 0 and falling.
And your IP address ranges from 1 to 127. That's what it will start with. Does 127.0.0.1 ring a bell to anybody?
That's your computer's own internal IP address, I think.
That's it. Interestingly, that's kind of interesting, but that would seem to fall under a Class A network, wouldn't it, Carrie?
It certainly does. And in fact, if you ping 127.0.0.57, it will loop it back as well. That's so you can have multiple addresses bound on the loopback.
Okay. Next class up is Class B, which your subnet mask is 255.255.0.0, so you have 2 portions for your network and 2 for your host. Let's see, and this is for like medium-sized networks. This would cover like corporations and universities. And your IP address range is starts with 128 to 191. Now, there are like 16,382 possible networks you can create, and 65,534 hosts per network. So these are actually getting rather large. Actually, Class A is your largest. And then you have the one that most everybody's familiar with, which is your Class C network. And these are your home and small office networks that everybody's familiar with the 255.255.0 as your subnet mask, which gives you your IP address, and your IP address range on this starts with 192.222.23. And they say there's 2,097 possible networks and 254 hosts per network. And if you calculate out the host bits, that's what it comes down to. Alright, so any questions on the first 3 of those classes?
Can I throw a
spanner
in?
Go ahead.
It's a little spanner. If you actually look at the first bits of the network address for class A, B, and C, the first bit of a class A is 0, the next bit for a class B is 10, and the next bit for a class C is 110. You don't have to know that. I'm just pointing it out. But if you want to know how why the boundaries fall the way they do, 0 to 127 means that the most significant bit has to be 0. 128 to 191 means it needs to be 10. And then from 192 to 223 is 110. That used to be in the old curriculum. They pulled it out.
Interesting. Because they don't say that in this one. But that does make sense. All right. Any questions so far on the classes?
Not from me, not on those ones, I don't think.
Okay. Class D is one. That's your multicast addressing. So you're not going to see this. You're not going to be able to actually... I don't think you can do this one yourself. At least I've never seen it happen. But your IP address starts with a range from 224 to 239. And there's a nice little example in the notes later on, which I'm going to get to, dealing with multicast addresses. And then they have Class E, which is experimental for experimental use. And that starts with IP addresses from 240 to 255. Now, I actually had a question asked of me in the Indian lecture as to how the IP addresses are how they come up with the IP addresses for the multicast group. And honestly, I hadn't had a chance to look it up.
Sorry, what was the question? How are the IP addresses what?
One of the Indian students asked me how they come up with the IP addresses for the multicast groups. How would you actually come up with the IP addresses to do that?
Ah, they're assigned by the IANA, I-A-N-A, Internet Assigned Numbers, whatever they are. And you actually have to apply for the multicast group that you want and the size of the multicast group that you want. But the masks in multicast are really weird. I don't even want to go there, but it's like 224 dot blah dot blah dot blah with a subnet mask of 240 dot 0 dot 0 dot 0. It's like, ooh, my head hurts.
Yeah. Good lord. Doing that kind of stuff. No, thank you. I'd rather not try and find the network that's on. Okay. Let's see. So, that's the IP address classes. And they are all in your notes. With pretty much just the exact same stuff that I gave you. So, any questions on that?
Hey.
Okay. Do we need to go over public and private IP addresses, or does everybody have a fairly good understanding of those?
I get what they are, I think. What is the thing for a private IP address again? It's 69 point something, isn't it?
No, that's a pipa.
Basically, your private IP addresses... let me see if I have this in my notes here.
I know them, but if you've got them in your notes, that's better.
Aha. Okay. Yeah. All right. So your private IP addresses give you let's see. It gives you one class A, 16 class B, and 256 class C networks. Now, the IP addresses for these are as follows. Your class A is 10.0.0.0, so you can have pretty much everything in that range. As long as it starts with a 10, that would be your class A network. Your class B, your network portions are anything from 172.16 to 172.31, and then you have your two host portions after that. So that's that. And your class C, which I'm sure everybody's familiar with, is 192.168.0 to 192.168.255. Now, obviously, your private IP addresses aren't routed onto the internet. If they are, well, then your router's broken and you need to fix it. And I think everybody knows what the public IP addresses are, correct?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Let's skip down here and go with the unicast, multicast, and broadcast section. So, can somebody define what unicast means?
Sending some information to a single recipient, usually a single network host.
Very good. That's exactly what it is, one host to another. All right. So what about multicast? Anybody other than Aiden?
That's where it's going to, like... Okay, I thought I knew. That doesn't quite work.
Bert, go ahead.
When it goes to more than one host on the network, but not everyone.
That is exactly correct. Your multicast is actually split up into a group of hosts. So, Bert's right. It doesn't go to everybody, but it goes to a certain group. Which leaves your broadcast, which goes to everybody, sort of like your television and your radio broadcasts. Let's see. And the notes say that your destination IP address and MAC address determine which type it is. So, and I mentioned that earlier, the host portion of the IP address, if you convert it out to binary, it's going to be all ones. So in other words, you're going to have 255 all throughout your host portion. Your MAC address is going to be all ones as well, which will translate out to 12 hex F characters. Now, your multicast is actually a rather interesting one. They have, like I said before in the class descriptions, your multicast addresses start off with IP address of 224 to 239.255.255.255. Now, the destination MAC address is actually kind of an interesting one to figure out. Second, I'm scrolling through my notes here. There we go. Your multicast address, MAC address, will always begin with 01-00-5E. Now, that's only the first six hex digits, and the last of those are your the last three of the IP, the last three octets of the IP converted out to hex. So that will give you your six pairs for your MAC address. They do have a nice little diagram, which I did put in my notes, if anybody wants to go over that.
This is kind of cool, but it does my head in, to be honest. The way that you multicast is amazing.
Yeah.
They take the intermediate result before CRC is calculated and then do something horrendously mathematical with it, and it works. The network card can figure out what it should be listening to and what it shouldn't be listening to, but I don't quite yet understand how it works either.
Yeah. What they have in the diagram is just the how they show the... They just have how they make the IP address up.
Hopefully that's better, sorry.
And, I mean, the MAC address up from the MAC IP... from the multicast IP, which I thought was rather interesting, but that can get a little bit of... that can give you a little bit of a headache if you really wanted to go through it. Let's see. Well, This next section is just about how IP addresses are obtained, which of course we can do dynamically or statically. And before I actually, well, I don't think I need to go too much into that, because everybody's had a nice, wonderful experience with this in Chapter 3 labs, haven't they? Alright. The only thing I do want to mention is if you are so inclined to set your IP addresses on your network up statically, have fun, because you could really run into a lot of errors, especially if you got to type everyone in manually. Personally, if I'm going to do it, I do it DHCP. Just even though it is for a small network, but it's still a lot better than having to put all the nice, wonderful information in that you have to put in. That being your IP address, your subnet mask, and your default gateway. Oh, and your DNS servers. I forgot about those. But you do have to put those in static if you configure stuff statically too. You do have to put your DNS servers in. So, if you are managing a network, have fun doing it statically.
Yeah, I didn't think you needed to do the DNS servers, but I'll have to go into my router and have another look.
You certainly do, because the router hands them. Your router hands them out dynamically. So when you go onto your router, I know because I've read the book to your router. It hands out its own address as a DNS server. But the interesting thing, guys, is if you get your DNS server wrong, Skype will work and not much else, because Skype doesn't need DNS to function. Actually, so does Bitcoin. So Skype and Bitcoin will work, but a lot of your other applications won't. So that's a good tip-off that you've got a problem with your DNS resolving somewhere.
Okay.
Will some of, like, streaming radio-type things possibly work? Multimedia clients, you know, like players work without your DNS servers configured correctly?
They can if the web page that you get to, which would require the DNS to work to get there in the first place, if it was like a stream of, you know, 213.99.4.5:8844 or whatever, if the stream was specified as an IP address, then it wouldn't need DNS. But if it was specified as a name, it would need DNS. So my general tip is if Skype is logged in and nothing else is working, then your DNS is possibly not working as well as you'd like it to.
I can't remember. There was a free DNS client servers that you could log into and actually point your... You could specify it. Yeah, that's it. Yeah. And then it basically... They claim
it will
take a load.
I had one day that Winamp was working for me on some audio streams, and nothing else was working, and I believe there was a problem with the DNS server, so I was wondering if that was maybe what was going on.
Okay, just to get this out of the way,
this was a couple of years
OpenDNS is amazing. For a very small fee, you can...
A computer working for the first time in about 10 years.
OpenDNS is amazing. It lets you filter all sorts of things. So if you're doing work for people, especially for people with children, you can turn on a whole stack of filtering. So you change the router to point through OpenDNS. A lot of the time the DNS is faster through OpenDNS. But if you don't believe me, go and get a copy of DNS Bench from Gibson Research and play with that. It's not particularly accessible. You'll need a little bit of mouse cursoring, but it will benchmark 32,000 DNS servers and tell you which one is going to be fastest. And it can write log files and stuff. It's kind of cool. But yeah, OpenDNS, it's often faster than your ISP's DNS, sadly.
That's what they claimed, and I was like, I had never tried them, but I'm gonna have to change my router's DNS servers here and give that a shot, see what it does. That's actually kind of cool.
If you change it and you don't set up an account or anything, it won't filter anything. It'll let you go to everything by default. So if you just change your DNSs, it'll just be a faster name resolution. And they're even faster over here in Australia. I was surprised. So we use it. And I have the little home account that lets me filter things if I'm, you know, ever feeling particularly nasty. But yeah, they're pretty good stuff. I can't actually fault them yet.
Yeah. The other one I had stuck in my head was dynamic DNS, but that's a whole other story. That wasn't the one I was looking for. Alright. Let's see. Now, I don't think we need to go into how to configure the DHCP stuff, because 99% of the time, your router's already set up to do that. So does anybody actually want me to delve into that a little bit?
Not for me, because it's different from model to model anyway.
This is where they're talking about the Discover, the DHCP Discover that I was talking about earlier. They don't actually say anything about specifically configuring routers. They go through the DHCP Discover, which is what I covered earlier. And that is actually about it. Well, actually, they do go through, talk about the Linksys, but the majority of what they talk about is the DHCP Discover, and how the clients actually get the DHCP get their IP addresses from a DHCP server. So that's pretty much the relevant part of this section. Okay. Any questions so far? Okay. Looks like the last section of this is address management, which just covers the fact that your router is the gateway between you and the internet, or at least your ISP. And they cover, yeah, this is pretty much covering the routers and the fact that they have the single IP address going to the internet, and they keep everything separate. And they do actually talk about the integrated router and connection through a gateway device, which they're pretty much the same, well, similar. Let's see. That's pretty much that. The last section of this is network address translation, which pretty much means that you're going to take the private IP address, translate it out to a publicly routable one, and then when stuff comes back in, you go back and reverse the process and take it back from the public to the private IP address, and that's all done in your router. So, that's Chapter 5 in a nutshell. I'm surprised I got through that in, like, less than an hour. Alright, let's do this. Let's, who's up for taking a quiz? A nice, fun, 11-question quiz.
Sweet.
Okay. Question 1 says, a technician is setting up equipment. Which 3 devices will need IP addresses? So this is a yes or no. Let me see. Who's all in? Whoops. Okay, everybody's in chat. That's what I want to make sure of. Okay. So, your technician setting up equipment, and they want to know which pieces of equipment need IP addresses. So, your first option is a printer with an Ethernet card, yes or no? And yes, that would be. What about a web camera attached directly to a host? And from way back, what would that web camera be considered? What kind of device would that be considered?
I was going to say peripheral, but yeah.
Yeah, that's actually peripheral. I don't know. I suppose it... Nah. Peripheral's a better one. That's what it would actually be considered because of it being attached to the computer. Alright. What about a server with 2 NICs? Yes, that one would need an IP address. What about an IP phone?
Interestingly, it would need two IP addresses.
Well, yeah, it would. unless one of the two network cards isn't actually hooked to anything. What about an IP phone? Yes, the IP phone would need one. Alright. And I'm just going to do the last two because, you have a standalone workstation and you have a PDA attached to a networked workstation. And those are the last two. And I'm sure you can take a guess at the answer. And, neither one of them would need IP addresses because they're both not attached to a network. The PDA is attached to a network computer, but the PDA itself doesn't need an IP address. Oh lord, this one's an interesting one. We had the nice little debate about this one in the Indian class. Which three statements are true about binary octets? This one we had a little bit of a debate about in the other class. But your first option, if a bit is a zero, its column value isn't counted. Now, we're going to have a little bit of a debate on this one, I think, but yes or no, is that true of a binary octet? Interestingly enough, I think
they... Brian?
Yeah, well, they need to reword the answer, I think is the problem. Because the answer is, or the choice is, if a bit is a zero, its column value is not counted. They need to reword that just a little bit. But that's now with that one that we like I said, we had a little bit of a debate on that one in the other class because I'm wondering. The way they worded it, I'm wondering if when they're talking about actually doing the binary to decimal conversion, because the columns that you actually add up are the columns with the ones in them, and then you keep the zeros as placeholders, but the actual numerical value in them isn't actually added up, so I'm thinking that's where they were coming from. Let's see. The second option says the value of each bit in an octet is twice that of the bit to its right. And actually, that is one they're looking for, because if you start off on the right, you start off in your ones column, and then you go 2, 4, 8, and then as you move to the left, it doubles. So that would be true for what they're looking for, because the answer says the value of each bit is twice that of the bit to its right. So what they're looking for is basically that it doubles. Option number 3 says the rightmost bit in an octet has a value of 0 when it is turned on.
Sorry, could you say that again?
Okay. The rightmost bit has a value of 0 when it is turned on.
Thanks.
Yep, no problem. And that is not true. Because obviously when you turn that bit on, or you have a 1 in that rightmost column, it's 1. Let's see. The fourth statement that they want to know about says the host looks at every bit of an IP address as it's received by the NIC. Now, actually, they are looking for that one to be true, because the hosts have to look at the IP addresses. So they have to look at every bit so that they know where actually everything needs to be routed, and they have to look at every bit because what happens if it's a broadcast message, and they don't look at every bit, then they miss that. All right. And the last, well, there's a couple more here. If all of the bits in an octet are set to 1, then the value of the octet is 256.
No, actually, that can't be right, can it?
That's actually not correct. When all the bits are turned on in an octet, it only comes up to 255. So, yeah. If they wanted 256, they'd extend it out one more bit, but we're only looking at 8 bits, so then it comes out to 255. And of course the last one says there are 32 value positions in an octet. And that is also not true, because how many positions are there in an octet?
Well, there's,
I'm not looking at chat at the moment. Who put that in?
I said 8. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm not. But octo means 8, so I would assume there would be 8, no? I mean, it makes sense that there are 8, because there are 8 binary points.
Yeah, that's right. There are 8 in octet. I just wasn't looking at chat to see who put the answer in.
Now, the octets are the ones separated by periods. They're not the full number, right?
Correct. They're the
192 is one octet.
Yes, that's it. Okay. So, what they have here for question 3 says match the number of the first octet to the corresponding IP address class, A, B, or C. So, let's see what we get here. What I'm going to do, I'll just read the statements and then just put A, B, or C, and some of these are not going to be used. So, bear that in mind as well. And the first option says first octet is all zeros.
Really? That's not even a class A address.
I don't think that's any address, is it?
Well, it couldn't be, because if it's all zeros, then it's just not there, I would have thought.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, that one's not used. Let's see. Your first octet is 126, class A, B, or C. Any other guesses? That one is actually a class A. Because remember the starting IP address, the starting range for your IP addresses was 127.
Oops.
Alright, so, first octet is 130. 130. That would in fact be a class B. Let's try a first octet of 200. Very good, that is class C. What about a first octet of 224? Your IP address is starting 224 to 239 are... Does anybody remember which group that corresponds to?
Is that the experimental ones?
No, that is actually your multicast group. That is class D. Although they don't ask for class D in this one, but... They do quiz you on it, which I find interesting. but that is class D. And then your last one on this one is first octet of 240. And that is correct. Again, they don't actually ask for that one, but it is class E. Okay, question 4. says, which statement is true concerning private network addresses? So this is an A, B, C, or D. Option A, they are always routed on the internet. Option B, they can be they can only be used by one company at a time. C, they enable internet web servers to be easily accessed by outside users. Or D, they are more secure because they are only visible to the local network. Choose now. Very good. That is D. The fact that they are more secure because they're only visible to the local network. Remember, if a private IP address gets routed out onto the internet, well, then you have problems. And either you or your network administrator needs to be called. Now, I know I went over this probably a little bit quick, but does anybody remember, and this is another A, B, C, or D, does anybody remember how many Class C networks are reserved for IP address space? Is it A, 1, B, 16, C, 128, or D, 256? Choose now. And the correct answer is 256, which is D. Okay. Question 6 says, what is the destination MAC address of a broadcast Ethernet frame? Is it A, 255.255.255.255? Is it B, 1.1.1.1? Is it C, AA-AA-AA-AA-AA-AA-AA? Or is it D, FF-FF-FF-FF-FF? Choose now. Very good. The answer is D. Let's see. Very good, guys. Alright. So, another matching question. Good thing is you only have two categories to two things to match to. So this will either be static IP or dynamic IP addressing. And it says there's four statements for each. So, first statement says useful for printers or servers. Is this static or dynamic IP addressing? Very good. That would be static. Provides more control over network services. Yes, that would be static. What about the possibility of input errors? Yes, that would be static as well. What about useful for mobile users? Very good, that is dynamic. Just out of curiosity, since they brought that up, I know you can, I'm just curious to know if any mobile phones will actually let you set an IP address, because I haven't run into that on mine. I think all the mobiles will actually, are only dynamic, if I'm not entirely mistaken.
They are actually, yeah, they're all DHCP. You can't actually set the IP address on a mobile phone, as far as I know. You can set it on the iPod, but you can't set it on the Nokias. You can actually go static for the iPod or the iPhone.
Yeah, I haven't
tried
seen
to
look
in...
Oh, go ahead.
Sorry about that. I had tried to look into doing the iPhone that way, and I couldn't find it.
How to statically set it?
Yeah, I found where it gives it the address, but that was it.
Okay, you go into settings, and then you go into network configuration, and then you unset DHCP or boot P, and then I believe you can set it. I'd have to go get my iPod to check.
Learn new things every day in here. Because I didn't even know you could do that on those. That's kind of cool. Okay, back to the quiz. Limited in time period. Yes, that would be dynamic. What about addresses provided by a server? Very good, that is dynamic. Let's see. Draws addresses automatically from a pool. Very good, that one is also dynamic. And the last one. Addresses are not reassigned to other devices. Yes, that would be static. Okay, question 8 says place these DHCP messages in the correct order for a host to obtain an IP address from the server. Alright, so there's 1, 2, 3, 4 of these. So, the first option they give you is a DHCP request. Does anybody remember where that would fall in? Step 1, 2, 3, or 4?
I'd say that'd be 1, wouldn't it?
Nope.
No, that would not. Any other guesses?
It'd be helpful to know what the other selections are, but...
Okay, what you've got is you've got, and I'll scramble them up, you've got acknowledgement, request, discover, and acknowledgement.
And offer.
Oh, sorry, yeah, offer, acknowledgement, discover, and request.
Okay, we'll try it a different way. Does anybody know which order those would go in? Okay. In the order it goes... No. The order it goes in is discover, offer, request, acknowledge. Because remember, the host sends out a discover message. And then the DHCP comes back with an offer, the host comes back with a request, and the DHCP goes back, the server goes back with an acknowledge to say, okay, you have this IP address for this period of time.
Okay.
Question 9 says an ISR, which is an integrated router, has a public IP address issued by the ISP. What is the purpose of the public IP address? Is it A, allows internal hosts to communicate with each other on the local network? Is it B, allows internal hosts to communicate with others on the internet? Is it C, allows the ISR to communicate with local hosts on the network? Or is it D, allows the ISR to communicate with local servers on... allows ISR to communicate with local servers on the network. Choose now. Very good. That would be B, which allows internal hosts to communicate with others on the internet. Okay. Number 10. What function does NAT perform in an integrated services router? Is it A, it takes a source IP address and translates it to a default gateway? Is it B, takes a local IP address and takes a local IP address and translates it to a source IP address? Is it C, it takes an internal IP address and translates it to a local source IP address? Or is it D, it takes an internal IP address and translates it to a global IP address, or a public IP address. That's what they should have said. That's it. It takes your internal or your private IP address and translates it out to your public IP address. Okay. Oh, question 11's out, because I don't have the graphic description for it. And it says refer to the graphic. So, guess that one's out.
We'll make a note of that and try and fix that.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's all there is for Chapter 5. So, do we... We've got about 30 minutes, but do we want to... Yeah, we'll break here, because I don't think we want to do 30 minutes on one recording and the rest of Chapter 6 on another.
I would be tempted to hit stop here.
Sweet.
As would I. Because I don't want to try to splice together two recordings. I could, but I don't really feel like it.